Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
So, I wanted to talk tonight about probably the most important thing to me about this practice. Been very inspired lately, having a lot of conversations with people about mindfulness and what is it grounded in? What is our practice for? And why are we showing up? Is it just to feel better? Or is it something else? And in my experience, the reason I'm here is not to feel better. Because as I know from this practice now almost a while, it's not at all about feeling better, but feeling all of it. And noticing how moment by moment things change. And to me, that's the incredible joy of this practice. Not because I get something out of it, or it gives something to me, but really learning how to allow the practice to work through me so that I can be more of service and perhaps more compassionate in the world. So often I hear stories about my practice and how my practice is going or how it's going for me. And lately I'm just like completely uninterested. Because in many ways it doesn't matter. Your opinion about it does not matter. Really at all. So to clarify this point, I'll present a story that I like a lot. It's from a book called The Book of Equanimity, which is a koan collection that in our lineage here at the Zen Center we study. And this case number 20 out of 100. And it says, Master Dizong asked Fayin, where have you come from? And Fayin said, I pilgrimage aimlessly. And his teacher said, well, what is the matter? What's the great matter of your pilgrimage? Why do you do what you do? And Fayin says, I don't know. And his teacher says, not knowing is most intimate. We could just end there. Where have you come from? We hear this all the time. Oh, what have you been doing? This or that. And he says, I pilgrimage aimlessly. What would that be like? To go through your day without an aim. Not that we can't have a plan. But this, to me, is speaking to how we can live our life with this kind of rushing greed to get through things. recently I was in line in Starbucks and these guys in front of me were talking about how they were going to kill time because they had a few hours. Until the event happened. And I think many of us spend our lives like that, waiting for something to happen. Even with a meditation practice, we might not think that the one that we have is enough. And if we just were doing this or doing that, then it's going to be two thumbs up. Or if we study with this teacher or that teacher. But how do we enter our life right where we are? So his teacher says, what is the matter of your pilgrimage? What is the matter of your life? What's most important? Recently, we've been visiting with a man at the end of his life. And we asked him that question. And he pointed to his partner. That's what matters. Him. How often we can live our life, I know for myself, that getting preoccupied with things that don't actually matter. When the chips are down, as they say. But what's it like to go through our life keeping thinking that those things actually are what's most important? The Fayan says, I don't know. And his teacher says, not knowing is most intimate. Coming closer can be even more intimate. What is this not knowing that's most intimate? What does it mean to not actually have a sureness? I can see you so much better.
I can hear you very well.
I was thinking about Ronnie, who's a person I've been working with in hospice, and I asked him, how are the days? He said, well, the amazing thing is, they're all different. And he said, you know, I never knew that. I always thought they were just days and days. Something to live through. And this is someone racked with pain, weighs about 98 pounds now, he said, opening my eyes and seeing the quality of the light coming through the window is just spectacular. Sometimes it's cloudy and kind of hazy, and the light is so different. Sometimes the light is just shooting in. And this morning, It was kind of hazy, then kind of shooting in, and kind of hazy, and kind of shooting in, and then just hazy. How many of us pay that much attention to our days, like Ronnie? I know I don't often. To me, that's the challenge of practice. But what would it be like to honor not knowing, intimacy, instead of fighting it or building a wall around ourselves so that we don't actually experience what we're experiencing? For example, the person next to you or near you or behind you right now. How do you participate now? Recently, I was teaching a retreat, and what was so amazing about it is that many of the people who are on this retreat had lots of ideas about what the retreat was going to be about. It was going to be life-changing. And maybe they are. But when we come in thinking it's going to be something, we're not actually experiencing anything. It's just we're like bringing in like a shield of our expectations and not actually bringing our curiosity into this moment. How is it to sit here now? Different than an hour ago. So these characters in this story are actually people who lived a while ago in China. Fayan, the student in the story, studied with a Vinaya master, and before that he had studied all the Confucian analects. But the story goes that the young Fayan and some brother monks were on another pilgrimage, when a snowstorm forced them to seek shelter in Dizong's monastery. I always think about these stories where, in a lot of these old Zen stories, there are people wandering on the road and then they seek shelter and people actually take them in. And I always wonder about myself and would I let someone in? And to me, it's also not just literally, but the literal is also quite important to consider, but also an attitude about how we sit with one another. How do we participate with one another? Do we let each other in? That this practice is actually learning to be as receptive as possible. So the story goes that Dizong did let them in to his monastery. And this is where that exchange took place. But if we don't let anybody in, we can't have a real exchange. We can't change, and we can't exchange if we don't let others in. And I love to report this because it's an ongoing investigation. With my work with dying people, is that no one yet has said, I'm so glad I spent all those years keeping others out. I've never heard someone say that. But I've heard thousands of people say, I can't believe I spent my life isolating myself and keeping others out. So many people. It's like such a weird commonality that we seem to have. We all tend to spend a lot of energy and a lot of time barricading ourselves in. It's very crazy. And it's like a uniting crazy. Equal opportunity crazy. But this practice is always pointing to that receptivity, which kind of comes back to my earlier point about when we start thinking about it, my practice and my life and my this and my that, we're missing something crucial to what this practice has truly to offer. The wonderful poet and writer Fernando Pessoa said, near his death, he said, if after I die people want to write a biography, there's nothing simpler to write. They only need two dates, the date of my birth and the date of my death. Between one and another, every day has been completely mine. How many of us could say that? That every moment between the dates of our birth and our death have been completely ours. It's so inspiring. Completely inhabiting our life. To me, that's the joyfulness of this practice. To me, it's like a reminder, and if you've ever read his poetry, you really would understand. He was really paying attention. Not living in a dream. So particular. Salud. So to me, really all we need to do in this practice is to completely take exquisite care of the particular and not fight it off. My oldest and dearest friend was supposed to come to the sit this morning. And his partner is starting their third round of chemo, 46 years old. He's dying, And they thought, better than to schlep in from Brooklyn, to stay and enjoy each other in bed. There just wasn't the energy to move. How fantastic. To stay in bed and enjoy each other in the time that we have. To me, this is what the practice teaches us. To pay attention. Instead of what we wish was happening, to be with what's happening. Or the wonderful writer Richard Bach says, the opposite of loneliness is not togetherness, but intimacy itself. Being intimate with where we are. It's like in our meditation practice, coming back again and again from the dream, without any shame or blame. Gently coming back with great tenderness and love. So that we can meet our lives in that way. The wonderful poet Rumi says, don't let your throat tighten with fear. Take sips of breath. Take sips of breath all day and night. Before death closes your mouth. Don't let your throat tighten with fear. Say what you need to say. Take sips of breath all day and night. Imagine living like that. Sipping your breath. Really tasting how you're breathing now. Before death closes your mouth. In Zen, we really focus so much on death. It's like death, death, death. And the reason we do that is because we're mostly, it's the big fear. But it's like the one thing we could be sure about. It's like guaranteed good housekeeping seal of approval, you will die. For sure. So it's so crazy. Like it's like another one of those crazy things where we spend our lives like, oh no, I'm gonna die, I don't wanna die, I don't wanna die. It's like that it actually is what's happening. And if we invited in more and to really examine what are we afraid about in our life? And what would happen if we didn't let our throat tighten with fear? How would we live then? Perhaps more intimately. Thank you.